Welcome to The Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth, best-selling author and co-creator of PaleoParents.com, where we focus on real-life solutions for families seeking health.
I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne, New York Times best-selling author and creator of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm passionate about improving scientific literacy around public health topics.
I like hashtags and bone broth.
And I'm just a super nerd.
This is part one of a live Q&A recorded while Stacy and Sarah were in Georgia together. Part two will follow next week.
Sarah! Stacy!
We're sitting next to each other.
Very close to each other, as
a
matter of fact.
I think it was the last podcast where we started it again and again and again with like, hey, we don't have to, that would be super awkward.
That would be really awkward right now. Let's not do that. So I have been joking around a lot lately about doing a video podcast with you.
I know.
And that's kind of a little bit what we're doing right now.
You then snuck it in on the fly after we left for Florida.
Yeah.
From Virginia. Because we usually produce, well, not usually, we produce the podcast. So we have all the equipment and all that kind of stuff. And after we left, you were like, hey, since you're staying here for like 2 hours, why don't we use that time to do a video podcast? And Matt, of course, who's been trying to also make it happen, was like, Do it!
You noticed I sent that message to both of you. Because I know that if I'd mentioned it to just you, you would have been like, didn't bring makeup or clothes with me on this trip, or some some kind of excuse. And then Matt would have never heard about it. But I knew that really I just had to campaign Matt.
Yeah.
And just be like, hey, we have this amazing thing with Facebook Live that we could use to actually do a live Q&A, and then we can record it. And it's pretty close to like a real video podcast live thing.
Yes.
So if you're listening to this podcast and you're one of our subscribers, we're actually taking live questions. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast the normal way, it's too late. But what we're doing right now is we're doing a live a Facebook Live on my Facebook page and answering questions as they come in. We have a few hundred people who are watching this live, which is really cool. And we're going to get through as many questions as we can.
They're rolling in.
Do you want to jump to it? Do you want to tell everyone about your trip?
Yeah, I mean, just briefly, also people Facebook Live understand, I've been on the road all day.
And she looks really good, doesn't she?
Thank you. It's very kind.
It's the truth.
I'm also terrible with compliments. So we went to Orlando. I had a work conference there. We made it kind of a slash family vacation. So I had a busy week kind of working and conferencing. And then in the evenings, we went to Universal because Wesley ate a salad every day for the last year and a half because he didn't get to go to Universal last time we went to Universal and he wanted to be tall enough. And when this work conference thing came up, I was like, hey, this is a great opportunity to reward the fact that he's eaten a salad every day and gotten tall enough. And he was tall enough to ride several of the Harry Potter rides, and he got a magic wand and produced magic all over Universal.
Isn't that
and,
cool?
Yeah, it's like the best thing for encouraging him to eat his vegetables because it was like a year and a half of no questions asked, just they're going to help me grow. I want a salad. Like at breakfast time, he'd be like, I want a salad. Like, okay, kid. And then I heard him tell both your daughters tonight and Ollie, who is Russ, the domestic man's son, when we were at his house yesterday, when they said ooh to a vegetable, not that your kids were like ooh to a vegetable, they just were like, no, I don't want that one, I want this
they
one.
Want, yeah.
There were plenty of vegetables eaten by all children, but Wesley was like, of course, I want all of it because it makes you grow healthy and strong. And I'm like, this is a good little lesson he learned here. So that's what we've been up to. And then we just decided to take the long way home so that we could visit you and Russ. And it's been great. So, and now we get to hang out and answer all these questions and podcast and do all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, and we just got back from our vacation.
From your vacation, that's right.
And
to visit family.
Yeah. Which was also really phenomenal, but also extremely busy, right? Yeah. So I try not to use the vacation word, because it's not quite
not quite what it is.
It's a visit or it's a trip home. I mean, it recharges me in a way that's a little bit different than how you get recharged from a real vacation. I think of vacations as being relaxing.
Yeah.
And these trips home for me are always so busy because all of our family is there from both my side and my husband's side. And then we have a lot of friends who, you know, some of them stayed on the west coast of Canada. Some of them moved away and then were able to move back. But we all have roots there. So it's even sometimes we'll plan our trips home to overlap so that I get to see other friends who live all over the world. And so it ends up being just like busy, 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 busy. But also it's Pacific Northwest, west coast of Canada. It's pretty amazing.
I think we should tell our viewers and our listeners the one thing that we've both been doing for the past week and a half all over the United States and Canada. Been catching some Pokemon.
Been catching a lot of Pokemon.
I came in and she had the app open and I was like, this is why we're besties.
Oh yeah, I have a spawning site in my backyard and Pokemon, like I have the greatest Pokemon just come into my house.
Yeah.
But the problem is I'm nowhere near a Pokestop, so I have to actually plan my outings to go past Pokestops so that I can get enough Pokeballs to catch the Pokemon to come to my house.
Yeah, as soon as we walked in, my kids saw that your app was open, and they started telling me about how you had all the
Pokemon. Yeah, they went and had a look at exactly what I had.
But I'm a higher level than you because I have more Pokestubs, and I walk and hatch eggs.
You also started playing before I did.
Like, I started a week and a half after Matt. Anyway, the point is, I've really been enjoying...
Wait, are you higher level than Matt now?
I'm one level below Matt.
Matt, you gotta catch up.
Right. When he's home, he rides his bike and stuff, but this vacation, I've been able to, like, catch up, you know? So, but it's really, for everybody who doesn't know and isn't playing yet, I think it's a really fun game to play with the kids. It's encouraged them to get out of the house more and walk more, and any opportunity to, like, get your kids out to explore nature and walking is a great idea, in my opinion. So, even if it's not, like, a paleo solution, it's embracing modern technology to live a healthy lifestyle, which is really what I've tried to focus on.
I think it's genius.
It's totally genius.
Because what it's doing is it's taking all of the positive aspects of gaming, right? Mm-hmm. So it's taking the eye-hand coordination and the logic and the critical thinking, the decision-making, right? These are things that are scientifically proven.
There's strategy to
it. There's immense strategy. And there's a whole pile of benefits to gaming that have been proven in scientific studies. And it's taking away this really negative thing of isolation in your home, in front of a screen, inside, sitting down. And in a way that, like, the Wii was never actually very good at getting people to be active in front of a game. It's taking people outside. You have to walk. You have to be outside, right? It's GPS, so it doesn't count if you try to hatch your egg on a treadmill.
No, it's the worst.
So it's taking all these positive things and it's bringing it outside where there's community. If you go to a Pokestop with a lure attached, you're like, whose lure is this? And you're like starting conversations with people.
Totally meet people. And, you know, we'll walk around the college campus near our house and people will be like, oh, there's a blah, blah, blah over there. Right? And it's never have we ever gone anywhere where
and
total strangers
are
talking to you like that.
What team are you? Wait, what team are you?
Red. Culture is our team.
Why
Matt is blue.
Oh, good. Matt. You and I, Team Mystic, way to go.
My mom is yellow.
Oh, well.
I don't know what's up with Team Yellow. I'm sorry if you're Team Yellow.
Whatever.
I don't know what's going on with you guys. All right. We should probably answer some of these plethora of questions.
We're going to get a whole pile of Pokemon questions.
Oh, I'm going to try not to put my hand
in front of the camera. Yeah. Sorry. I do that, like, I do a Monday Q&A every Monday.
And
sometimes it's topic, and sometimes it's just a free-for-all like we're doing right now. And everyone sees my finger every week. It's, like, it's just a thing.
Sorry. And I don't have the experience she has, so you'll probably see my finger more than once. I did get a few questions before we posted, so I'm going to go ahead and ask those from our Facebook page, the Paleo Parents Facebook
Let's
page.
Do it.
Okay. So someone says, oh, this is a fun one. I want to start out this way. I'd like to ask you a question pertaining to the two of you and your friendship. What is one characteristic or quality unique to you as an individual that you respect and admire about each other? What is the one thing you know about the other that would surprise viewers and listeners?
Ooh.
For example, do you have a messy pantry? No, she doesn't have a messy pantry.
You don't either.
I mean, depends on when you come. So, admittedly, the boys often eat packages of everything and then just leave the empty boxes.
That's kids' messy pantry, though. That's not your messy.
I know
pantry.
Exactly, but like it can become really messy if you go in there and you're like, oh my god. All
Every
messy
time
boxes.
I've been there, it's sort of comparable to mine that it's not like it's like OCD, everything labeled and everything perfectly arranged, but it's also like I put things back in the same spot every time, and
and I buy like almond flour in bulk and I put it in a labeled compartment that keeps bugs out, all that kind of stuff. Okay, so can you touch your tongue to your nose? That sort of thing. Leave the mortifying bits between the two of us.
That is a perfect thing for a video. Can you touch your tongue to your nose?
Sometimes I can. Like,
oh, you did it! I cannot.
You cannot.
But I can make my tongue go sideways.
I don't know about that.
And I can do the other side.
Okay. All right. I knew this question was coming, so it's only fair that I go first.
Yeah, I have to think about it. No, I don't have to think about it. I actually know my answer already.
I've mentioned this interesting thing in the podcast before, but I'm going to say it because to your live viewers, if Sarah was going to get a tattoo, she would get an upside down octopus on the bottom of her foot.
With the tentacles curling around the top.
With the tentacles curling around the feet. And I actually ended up, I got a foot tattoo earlier this year, and I was talking to the tattoo artist who told me that they don't actually tattoo
the bottom of feet. They don't actually stay on the bottom.
You can't get it. But it was one of those things where when you said it, I was like, what? Like, where did that even come from, and how much sense does it make?
I mean, I think I had that idea in high school when all my friends were going and getting tattoos. I bought myself a winter coat. Like, that's what I did with my money because we grew up really poor. So when I had a summer job, it was like, my first summer job, I bought myself a bed because I didn't have one. So, like, I wasn't going to go out and
these are better life choices than a tattoo.
It maybe doesn't last as long. But I've always been a person who I'm fairly fickle when it comes to stuff like that. And I never thought, just by how often I completely change my hair, or change the style of clothes that I wear, or the type of jewelry that I wear, I figure I don't think there's any tattoo that I would commit to that I would feel like suits me for my whole life. But I had the idea in high school that it'd be really cool to get an octopus like hanging on for dear life on the bottom of your foot. So whenever someone asks me what you would get, that's my answer. But that idea is like more than 20 years old.
But it's like my favorite like interesting thing about you that I was like, you know, I mean, lots of things you tell me and I'm like, oh, that totally makes sense.
So one of the things that question asked was like characteristics unique about the other person. And, I mean, I don't think this is something that would surprise people, but you are probably one of the strongest people I know. I'm embarrassing you. I'm making eye contact.
Look what's happening.
Look away.
Look away. And she's saying nice things. I'm like,
no, it's like all the bad things. But I think, I don't know, you know, it's when you are, putting yourself out there on social media and a blog, I don't think people understand how intimidating it can be, what a sense of vulnerability comes with it. And, you know, there are, not the nicest people out there, right? So there's always comments that can be, sometimes they're well meant, but they're misconstrued. Sometimes they're not well meant. And that's something that is, I think, for all of us, a really challenging aspect of, you know, we're trying to create great resources for people to get healthy. And at the same time, we have to deal with sometimes very unfair, cutting, mean, I'm going to say criticism, but it's not really criticism. It's really just people being jerks. And I was going to say a different word, and then I remembered to keep it rated G.
Who's the one that needs a reminder on the rating?
Okay. And whenever I'm feeling frustrated, I read a comment that's not a nice comment. You are, even when you're not there, you're my grounding because you are so strong. And you, and not that you're, you know,
I'm certainly not perfect.
No, like, and like it, I know that these things will get to you and they'll upset you as well, but there's a way that you respond to it. You respond rather than react. And there's a way that you process it and then move on that is just beautiful. And it's that strength that I remind myself of.
Thank you.
That helps me get through those types of criticisms.
I totally said something like superficial and then you did that and now I'm like, mrr.
Stacey's also really good at math.
I am.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite stories. Yeah. All right. Like, you know, freaky elementary school test level good at math. All right.
Was there another question there that you wanted to?
Yeah. So the only other one here from my Facebook page, and I've seen some people on your Facebook comment about it as well, so we can kind of have that overall discussion, is about how to kind of integrate paleo or elimination diet or food allergies with kids and still make it fun. So there's a particular question here. I'm not going to, like, get into that details because I know that a couple people have talked about making it fun for
kids.
Yeah,
so it's really interesting. So my kids start school on Monday. And my six-year-old's classroom is going to be, they're actually, we just got an email today, it's going to be a treat-free classroom because there's so many different allergies. And they basically put all the nut allergy kids into one classroom this year. So really, really, so it's a nut-free class. So it's really severe nut allergies. But they're also making it a treat-free class, so they won't allow treats in for birthdays or any of the parties.
Anyway.
I mean, I'm actually really looking forward to it.
You can do stickers and tattoos or whatever.
So the teacher's like, I have lots of inventive ways for what we can do to celebrate, and don't worry about it, we'll do something cool. But for me, that's always been one of the big challenges for me is not just accommodating my kids, like, lines that we cannot cross, but also when they're in a classroom where there's a not complementary set of allergies. So, you know, my 9-year-old last year, she had a kid who was allergic to nuts, peanuts, shellfish, eggs, dairy, and they couldn't have any of it in the classroom, not gluten. So it was like, great, so that kid's eating wheat over there. And all of my, you know, grain-free treats that are, like, what I rely on, I can't
bring in.
And so it's something that I think both of us, through that type of experience, you know, it's part of it is knowing your kid. Part of it is knowing the lines that you can cross and can't cross, right? So, you know, I've often talked on the show about, for all of us, this journey is about finding that line between what our bodies need to thrive versus what our bodies tolerate and living somewhere in between. And when you're, you know, when things are really stressful or you're recovering from an illness, you're going to live close to what your body needs to thrive. And when you're on vacation, you're going to live closer to, you know, what your body will tolerate. And I think that's the same with kids, right? It's finding that line. So my kids do relatively well with gluten-free treats on occasion, but if they have too much sugar, I really don't like them.
Yeah, I can tell you that just coming out of a theme park where my children had butterbeer and ice cream and treats that they wouldn't usually have that were gluten-free, there was definitely, like, a period of time where I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, so who are these children?
My 9-year-old's figured out that she can't control her emotions if she has food dyes, and she doesn't like crying or screaming, like, whatever it is. She doesn't like not having control, which I think is great. So she's figured that out, and when her fourth grade teacher gave her Starbursts at the beginning of, like, at their meet and greet before school even starts, she said, no, thank you. I was like, yes! So there's part of this that's knowing what you can get away with and experimenting, and sometimes those experiments don't go so well, and those days aren't good days. And then there's part of it that's knowing your kid and knowing how to talk about it with your kid.
Yeah.
You know, my kids both are really invested now in the idea of a healthier diet and something that's going to keep them healthy for their whole lives and it's going to make them live longer. But when we started, we were talking about foods that hurt your tummy.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is, you know, you have to consider that Sarah and I's children have been doing this like 5 or 6 years, and where they are now in terms of what we understand they can tolerate or not tolerate and what to expect from their behaviors and that kind of stuff is entirely different from where it was 5 years ago. And, you know, when we started, it was a matter of, like, explaining things in terms of how many sleeps we were going to give things a try and which foods we were going to eliminate. And, we never said paleo with the kids until, like, 3 or 4 years in. And even then, we don't explain it to their teachers like that. We say that they're gluten-free, dairy-free, and that they try to not eat refined foods, you know? So teachers understand that they're avoiding junk foods and they're avoiding gluten and dairy as much as possible. And my kids, too, have treats that they leave in the classrooms for birthday parties and stuff like that, but they also get put in the classrooms with the food allergies, so we can no longer give them kind of paleo baked goods that would have had nuts or whatever in them, and we utilize, you know, something kind of in the middle, that it's not the worst thing in the world, it's not the best thing in the world. And so an idea of like a treat-free year is really great. But I also found that over the years, it's not just paleo people that are becoming more aware, it's parents in general that really want to go back to that real food mentality. And so there were a lot of parents that brought in like clementines that they would decorate or whatever for their birthdays, because the teachers are also like, we have a birthday every week. We can't have the kids out of control all the time. The teachers appreciate it when you come up with something else. So I think it's really, no matter which way you do it, it's all just about the approach and how you frame things. So, you know, if something is exciting to your kid or they understand that there's an impact to their body, there's a lot more engagement that you're going to get from your children in terms of like accountability and responsibility and feeling a sense of ownership for it, versus this fight of you're taking this away and I can't have it. It's the same like Weight Watchers mentality, right? Like, if you as an adult tell yourself like I can't have that, you get all disappointed and upset, versus telling yourself like I'm choosing to not eat these foods because they don't make me feel good, which is how we choose to approach paleo. It's not that I can't have a Cinnabon. Like, the Weight Watchers police isn't going to come and get me and be like, you're over and you have to weigh on the scale every week. And
can you imagine
shame
how
on
the
you.
Internet would blow up?
I don't even want to talk about it.
All right.
I don't eat Cinnabons because I'm celiac and I don't eat gluten. But I think about a Cinnabon all the time. Anyway,
was my request when my oldest was born in the hospital, and I had had gestational diabetes, so I had been not eating anything sugary for the sick health of my baby, and she was out, and that was what I asked for, and I sent my husband to Cinnabon.
I don't know.
For
I don't know why that's
them.
Like, I'm sure if I ate it, it would not be as good as I think that it is, but it's like, there's been no paleo version of a Cinnabon that's ever made
not
me.
That has that.
I mean, I love all of us that try to make paleo recreations, but like, the thing about that food that makes it good is the gooey gluten.
Is the gluten.
Like, you just can't. Like, I'm sorry, it's just never going to be the same. So anyway, my point is that, you know, I can think about those things, but it's in a different context. Like, I'm choosing to not eat that because when I do, I don't feel my best and I don't have a desire to eat that because it's not worth it to me. Not because I'm going to step on a scale and somebody's going to shame me, but because I don't like the way I feel when I eat that. And I think if you can apply that mentality to children, it's something that they understand a lot better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about weight loss. It's not about a diet. It's about eating the foods that make us the best. And that's why we named our first book Eat Like a Dinosaur, because it was a way to explain it to our children who were very young at the time, to say, like, dinosaurs didn't eat cakes and cookies, dinosaurs didn't eat pizza, like, dinosaurs ate meat and vegetables, and they lived a really long time, and they were healthy, and they could run, and they could be fast, and they were strong. All the things that you want to do, you want to grow, you want to be big, you want to be strong. Let's eat like dinosaurs. Let's eat meat and vegetables. And it made so much sense to them. And I you know, if you have a 16-year-old, obviously that concept isn't going to work. But if you have a 16-year-old, the concept of like, do you not want acne? Do you not want hormone imbalance? Do you want to be strong and fast in the track field? Like, whatever it is that applies to that person, you figure out, like, that's what applies when you're talking about changing your food habits.
And then having that more detailed conversation with the lines that you know you can't cross, whether it's, you know, for my oldest, it's gluten and food dyes. For my youngest, it's gluten and dairy. And, you know, I mean, we just use the word allergic. It's not really an allergy. And then, you know, if I'm having a more detailed conversation with them, I'll explain the difference. And they don't really get it, but they kind of understand that it's a bit
different. We call it a food sensitivity. Like, they tell people, because sometimes people will freak out, like, well, we serve bread in the restaurant. I'm like, they're not going to have, my mom has an EpiPen reaction to wheat. And when we go to a restaurant, we make it very clear, like, you cannot cross-contaminate or my mom's throat will close. Can you please be very clear with us? Like, she has an EpiPen, but, and so when we go out with the kids and not with my mom, we're like, no one's going to die, but we need cross-contamination to be careful. We have serious food sensitivities. We'll be sick for a long time, blah, blah, blah.
So I have, you know, I have the conversation. I just had it with the teachers on Thursday. You know, well, she's, you know, it's not going to be anaphylaxis. It's not like, you don't have to race her to the school nurse, but if she eats enough of it, she'll be throwing up. And if she eats just a little bit of it, you know, she'll have terrible acid reflux for 30 hours and won't be able to sleep at night. And then I'm going to send her to school to you. And, you know, it's, I think, you know, having that detailed conversation, you can have that with your kids. You can have that with their other caregivers, teachers, other people that are responsible for them. But a lot of this is, right, just like paleo is very individual, right? So all of us are taking this template and figuring out what works best for our bodies and also for our the other constraints on our lives, whether it's budget or time or just food preferences, or other people in our household who want to have different food preferences, right? We all have to have our own little way of tinkering with it and figuring out exactly how we're going to make it work for us. It's the same with kids, right? And I think it's really important to just remember to be compassionate and respectful to our kids.
Absolutely. All right, so speaking of kids, Maria says, what do you recommend be the first baby food this mama should try giving my little one? I think we should mention that we do have an entire podcast on like pregnancy and new baby and foods and breastfeeding. There's a, couple of
relevant podcasts there.
So for those people who are doing Facebook Live, we'll do a post in the next week or two when the podcast goes live, and we'll put links in the show notes to all those podcasts. You can also just Google the Paleo View and then whatever you're looking for, and then it'll come up. But for me, I gave Wesley, who was my only paleo baby, Sarah came to paleo after
my kids
were, so for Wesley, his first foods were, banana, avocado, and liver.
Not that far different from what my kids' first foods were, especially I didn't like how I did things the first time. So I changed it up for my second daughter and her first food was avocado and then banana. And then I think yogurt, which I mean, I would do a higher quality yogurt now, and I'd probably still have that in the mix, though.
I think the biggest message I want to say, there's two kind of thoughts that I have about first foods, and one is that your kid is not automatically ready when they have their four-month birthday, and they're not necessarily...
Isn't it amazing that they say 4 months now? It used to always be 4 to 6 months, and then it became 5 months, and then it became 4 months.
Yeah. So there's a website, and I don't know if it's still on there, that I used, kellymom.com, that had a list of things to look for in your child to know if they were ready for food. A couple of them are the ability to sit up straight on their own, having teeth, and not having the tongue reflex where they're only used to nursing or sucking a bottle, where their tongue goes when you give them food. Like, if the child doesn't know how to swallow...
I think you should do that again.
I saw baby Elliot do it I gave him, like, a tiny piece of bacon, and he was, like, enjoying it so much. It was his first time having bacon this morning that he, like... He knows how to eat and swallow, but like when the bacon came, he became so excited that he like couldn't handle it, and his mouth started doing crazy things. And I was like, "Oh, it's so cute." But they call that, I think, tongue thrust. Yes, thrust, not thrush. That's
thrush is a different thing.
So if your baby is, you know, like you go to give it a tiny piece of food or a spoonful of something and they can't figure out how to swallow, don't keep jamming it in. Like you see pictures of people with the first foods and the baby's like covered in the food and they're like, I think he got a little bit in. Like he's not ready, and that's okay. Cole didn't eat solid foods until he was like 9 months or something.
One of the things that I also looked for in my kids that was sort of family folklore, I guess, was to look for the kids having an interest and reaching for the foods. Yeah. And it was, you know, if the kid was in my lap during mealtime, I was eating and they were trying to grab the fork and redirect it into their own mouths.
Yep.
That was a sign. So that's another good one. But, you know, it's becoming now more accepted that meats are very easy to digest, especially slow braised meats, things like egg yolks. And I know that in Australia, they're changing their first foods recommendations from government recommendations and starting to recommend things like avocado, egg yolk, and meats as being first foods.
I did give Cole egg really early, but he didn't react well to it. And so it became one of those foods that I introduced later because my family...
It is a high allergy food.
Yeah, we
like
have
1 to 2%.
Yeah, we have difficulty digesting, particularly egg whites. So we went with liver. Liver is so great for babies, not just from a nutritional perspective, but because the texture is really soft and crumbly and they don't have to like chew it. They can kind of gum it down.
Yeah.
It works really well. And even before I was paleo, I gave my babies liver just because it was like a recommended protein because of the consistency. So
remember not to impose your own food preferences onto your baby. So if you hate liver, which is no judgment, I mean, it's not the easiest food to like, you know, when you're trying to give it to your baby, your baby's babies tend to really recognize nutrient-dense foods and tend to really respond very positively to them, but they're not going to respond to that if you're doing this. You know, you're making a face and you're giving them the spoon.
Even if it's like a younger sibling and there's older siblings and you're verbally talking about how it's gross or whatever, you know, like, just remember that your children are mirrors. Like, I can tell you, I have an almost 11-year-old, and it's like looking in the mirror, talking to him half the time, and they pick that up from you. So they're always watching, and the more positively you frame things, the more excited you are about it, the more you find a way to make it interesting, the more they will believe you. You want to read the next one?
Which one did you...
The top one?
From Angelique.
Yes.
I am new to listening to your awesome podcast. I mean,
we always pick comments that are nice.
We always choose comments that that complement the podcast first, so good job. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of weaning off the many supplements I am taking. I am trying to focus on whole foods. I have Hashimoto's. Okay, I have some thoughts on that.
Okay.
So, in an ideal world, we would get all the nutrition that our bodies need from whole foods. In order to do that, that requires a really strong focus on the most nutrient-dense foods available to us. So organ meats, seafood, including fish, shellfish, and sea vegetables, and lots of vegetables, including the whole rainbow, highly pigmented fruits like berries and citrus is also like, I don't necessarily think of it as being highly pigmented, but it's a very nutrient-dense fruit. And making that the basis of our diet, and then rounding that out with other fruits, other high quality meats, and you know, on the autoimmune protocol, that'd be about it, right? So you're rounding it out with these other things that are maybe a step down, and you know, maybe looking at some phase one reintroductions. So I think nuts and seeds have a compelling amount of nutrition in moderation. High quality eggs.
I was gonna say egg yolks was the first thing.
Egg yolks, if you can tolerate them, and something like a grass fed ghee, even if you can't do other dairy. So in our house, I'm really sensitive to dairy, and so is my 6-year-old. But we can do Pure Indian Foods cultured grass fed ghee. That's every certified. Test is batch tested for dairy proteins and lactose. I think Ten Star also does all the same testing, and I've been fine with theirs as well.
Those are the two brands we use as well.
And so I think it sort of takes that focus, but then it also requires managed stress levels and really good digestion, you know, getting enough sleep. Like, these other things come into play in terms of managing our diseases, and in terms of even influencing whether or not we need added nutrition. So if you're stressed, you're burning through vitamin C and you're burning through magnesium, because that's something that your body uses to make cortisol. So understanding that interaction between diet, digestion, lifestyle is really important for determining what supplements are good ones to wean off versus ones that, you know, maybe you do need to take supplements. So, you know, I have supplements that I take, and I've worked with my functional medicine specialist to take the smallest number of them that I can, but I also take, you know, I don't like taking the cocktails, so I take individual things that, you know, I've been tested for micronutrient deficiency, so I take the one thing that I'm deficient of. So it's a few bottles, and I take them every day, and it's it doesn't make me a failure. It doesn't mean I'm not paleoing hard enough. It doesn't mean I'm not,
my favorite phrase.
Right? It doesn't mean that I'm not AIPing hard enough. I probably could handle my stress level better, but I'm also doing all of these things, and these things take away from Pokemon nature walks.
For real.
Right? So I think that when it comes to going off supplements, I think it takes really understanding why you're taking something, what it's for, who recommended it. I think pretty much everything you'll want to wean off. There are things like, if you're taking high dose vitamin C, for example, did you know you can have, if you take a few grams of vitamin C a day and then all of a sudden you stop taking it, you can have basically like a reactive scurvy from it, right?
No, thank you.
Don't get scurvy. The truth on that one. So, and I think working with a doctor, so like, hey, I'm taking this. What is that one for? Is that one I can go off? And don't think of just, I don't want people to think of medications or as supplements as failure. I think what we're trying to do is take the best of everything that we have available to us. I'm not going to give up my hot water tank either. And hot showers are not paleo. They're not. When did cavemen have hot showers? No. But I'm not giving those up. I'm Canadian, too. It's like a thing. It's the great Canadian shower.
I think, too, the other thing to consider is a lot of people are really interested in going off supplements when they adopt something like AIP. And, you know, we don't know where Angelique is in her process, but until you're feeling better and all of your symptoms are in remission, that's another factor to consider. Yeah. Not just because you go AIP and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to eat more oysters and oysters. Eat more oranges, so I don't need the not zinc together. And vitamin C. Lemon on your oysters. Anyway, it's important to get to a place where your body is feeling really good before you even think about that stuff. And I will say from experience, having been on the autoimmune protocol for, I think, 4 years now, and I was like your first official AIP person because you told me what your protocol was before your book came out. So I'm your claim to fame.
It was, you probably were only 6 or 7 months after. No, wait a minute. No, but it was early on. I don't remember. I'm not even going to try and place time on that. It's been a while.
It's a long time. My point is that, you know, I have flares. I also have thyroid disease. I don't officially call it Hashimoto's, but technically I think it is Hashimoto's. But
did you get antibodies tested?
Remember I had that noid thing and they were like, it's... thyroid disease because if you have a cyst on your thyroid, it's not functioning properly.
But they usually don't call it Hashimoto's unless they test
antibodies. Right, exactly. So I don't have normal functioning thyroid, but I also was not willing to go off of AIP to see what was going to happen to my levels. So I'm managing with lifestyle and AIP.
I might have celiac, but I'm not eating gluten in order to get tested.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm just gonna tell you I have thyroid disease. It doesn't really matter how we call it. But, you know, I'll go 6 months to a year and feel really great and be able to, you know, eat rice and cream and, you know, do these kind of things, not sleep as much. And then, like, with the back injury, it causes me all kinds of inflammation and stress in my body, even if my lifestyle isn't stressed, right? If you have any sort of stressor in your life, especially with inflammation, it's going to cause a disruption to your normal function, and it's going to require special attention. So right now, I'm taking way more supplements that I feel comfortable taking, but I also feel really fantastic and they're helping me, so I'm going to just keep taking them. And then once I feel like I'm kind of in a groove, then I'll look at, like, can I take less of them? Yeah. Which don't I need to take? And that kind of stuff. So just be thoughtful and careful, work with a medical professional, and be mindful of your body.
The other flip side of that is to not let supplements be your crutch for not putting effort into diet and lifestyle. Yeah. So... you know, if you don't like oysters and you know you need zinc, instead of taking a zinc supplement, look for other food sources of zinc that you do like. Or maybe eat an oyster once in a while, even if you don't like it that much. I mean, if you're allergic, don't do it. Ugh, that'd be bad. But also make sure that, you know, for anyone else who's sort of listening and we go, oh, well, I'll just leave my multivitamin there and not worry about the organ meat. It really can't replace that.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.